often has this happened to you at work? You're with several other coworkers at a meeting when your manager brings up a project that needs to get done. It's challenging, time-consuming task, and no one wants to do it, and that ultimately won't factor into your job performance review or lead to a promotion. But it has to get done. So you sit for a few moments in uncomfortable silence until you finally raise your hand and say, "Ugh, fine, I'll do," or at least that's how it sounds when I say it. "Fine, I'll do it." It turns out that the people most likely to volunteer for extra projects at work are like me. They're women. In her recent article in the Harvard Business Review called "Why Women Volunteer for Tasks That Don't Lead to Promotions," Lisa Vesterlin, Andrew W. Mellon Professor of Economics at the University of Pittsburgh, details why this is the case and what can be done to make it better for everyone at work. The article is co-authored by Linda Babcock and Maria P. Recalled and appears online at hbr.org. And I'm happy to welcome Lisa Vesterlin to our show. And we invite you to give us a call to join the conversation. If this has happened to you at work, do you often find yourself doing extra tasks that no one else wants to do? Give us a call at 212-433-9692. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first off, how did this even come about as a topic of research? It's that thing that everyone feels, but doesn't really perhaps maybe think about as a research topic until somebody takes it on?
It actually came about from a group of us starting what we called a no club. So we all felt like we were being saddled with too much work and that we struggled to say no to tasks when people were asking us to do things. So without being interested in research, the research aspect of it at all, we were five women who started getting together about once a month. And the purpose of the club was really to talk about every time we got asked to do something new, whether or not we said yes or no, or how we're going to say yes and in turn say no to something else. So it was a way of being kept accountable for all the yeses we kept saying, and which truly made us quite miserable at work. And after a while, we started wondering whether or not this was something that was unique to us as women. So there were five women in the club, and sort of started digging around. Several of us had done research on gender before. And looking at the literature, it's clear that there's quite a bit of evidence that suggests that women do more of the tasks that we would classify as being non-promotable. That's tasks that sort of are really important to the organization, but when it comes down to raises or promotions, it's not something that people pay attention to. And the problem with sort of just looking at who's doing what at work is that you don't really know why they're doing a certain task. Indeed, we got data from a large public university where they had asked people to serve on a committee. In this particular case, it was Faculty Senate. And we found in that data that women volunteered far more to serve on these committees. But the problem with looking at data from the real world is that women could just be volunteering for these tasks because they're really good at it. It could be that they really enjoy doing them. So that's sort of where it came from, was saying, well, is it just because women like to do these tasks? Because we certainly didn't feel like we were doing all the things we were doing just because we liked it. So we decided to take it into the laboratory that we have at the University of Pittsburgh and sort of try to study this behavior in a very, very controlled setting where we couldn't just say, well, the reason why women are, you know, cleaning out the fridge or taking on the low-level client or filling it for someone else who's unable to make it to a meeting, it's not just that they enjoy doing this. It's really, there's something much more fundamental at stake. So well, just to sort of, you know,
Oh, I was just going to say, you write in the article that you found that in particular, women may volunteer more because they may be more risk averse or more altruistic than men.
So that's one of the possibilities. And that's one of the things that we actually In our particular study, that is not what we see as the driver for what is going on. So what we did in the study was that we brought a bunch of men and women into a laboratory at Pitt. We put them all in front of a bunch of computers, and we said, you're paired in a group of three, and now it's going to be like volunteering, just like the example that you had before. And we said, if you have 2 minutes to make a decision, if nobody volunteers, you each get a dollar. But if someone volunteers, then that person gets $1.25, and the two other people in your group gets $2. So it's clear someone should just volunteer. We're all going to be better off if someone just volunteers. It's just that everybody would prefer for someone else to do it. And what we saw systematically is, even in this very neutral setting where there's no enjoyment from clicking the button in front of your computer, that women do it far more often, so about 50% more than men. And indeed, that could be coming just because women might be more altruistic or more risk-averse. But an easy way to test that in our setting is to say, well, now let's try to do the exact same study and just have women. So now when I come into the room, all the other people in the room are women, and I say, if it's just because women are very altruistic or very risk-averse, I should see them being much more likely to volunteer than if I had only men. And what we see in that scenario is that men and women, when they're by themselves, volunteer equally. So it's not as if men are just not clicking the button because they are volunteering because they don't know how to do that. They know how to do it. It's just that they can only do it when the women are not there. So that really, in our study, rules out that the reason why women are doing it is just because they're risk averse or just because they're altruistic. The reason why they're doing it, at least in our study, appears to be because they're expected to do it. The men come into the room, they see the women, they know how we play these games. They know that the women are going to volunteer, and the women look around and they see the men, and they also know how we play these games in everyday life. And we know that the women are going to be the ones who will raise their hands and volunteer. So what it really looks like in this, and that doesn't mean that that's the only explanation. Obviously, there are many reasons why we behave the way we do in the workplace. But it looks like part of it is that we're expecting women to volunteer. And in turn, it becomes optimal for the women to do that. So we're expected to volunteer, and that's why we do it. Another way to test that is also to bring in, then we bring in a fourth person. We say, this is your team of three people. Who are you going to ask to volunteer? And you see the pictures of the three people in your group. Now, if it's because we expect women to volunteer, we would expect to see women being asked far more often than men, and that is indeed what we see. So both male and female managers in our study repeatedly asked females to volunteer. And it turns out to be a really good idea to do that, because when you ask a female to volunteer, she will volunteer 75% of the time in our study, whereas men only do it 50% of the time. So all around, it really looks like this, that the belief that women will, or the expectation that the women will step up to the plate, is a pretty important factor in the way that we're doing this.
All right. Well, listen, I'm speaking for listeners. I'm speaking with Lisa Vesterlin, the Andrew W. Mellon Professor of Economics at the University of Pittsburgh, about her recent article for the Harvard Business Review, Why Women Volunteer for Tasks That Don't Lead to Promotions. If you have a comment or a personal experience you'd like to share with us, please don't hesitate to call. We're at 212-433-9692. So, Lisa, as you were talking about the fact that it seems almost that women are expected to volunteer for certain tasks, your article also talked about the fact that a lot of times managers will, when divvying up certain tasks that have to be done, will specifically hand off the quote-unquote housekeeping jobs to the women in the workforce.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's coming both from women volunteering, but it's also coming from the manager being far more likely to distribute the task to the female worker. And once again, you know, if you need to, it's not just, what's intriguing is that it really doesn't matter whether or not it's a male or female manager. And that's where we sort of need to stop and reflect on it, because why do we end up asking the female to, and it's not just housekeeping tasks sort of at the workplace, but far more importantly, it is sort of all the low-ranking tasks in a workplace. So if it is a client that nobody else wants to handle, who are you going to give it to? You're most likely going to give it to the worker who is going to complain the least. And chances are that that worker is going to be the female. So if you're trying to get something done quickly and you know that there's an assignment that most people really don't want to do, where are you going to hand it off? And chances are that both when you hand it off and if you just bring it into a meeting and ask someone to take it on, that the person who will raise a hand to say, sure, I will take it on, that person will be female.
Did your study find if there was anything that managers can do, some sort of training to help them realize their bias in handing these specific tasks to women more often than men?
So I think in this case, awareness, coverage, like what you're doing right now, is really important, because we have spent a lot of time sort of thinking at the top end of the spectrum. How is it that we, you know, break through the glass ceiling? How do we lean in and fight for the good stuff? We've spent much less time thinking at this end of the spectrum. And what is so nice about these low promotability or non-promotable tasks is that anyone can do them. So it's not important who gets the task assigned. What is important is that it gets done. And if it truly is a low promotable task, it means that anybody can do it. So rather than asking for a volunteer, we should just take turns. So that's a very, very easy way. It's not even that I need to de-bias anyone. We just need to become aware that we have a systematic problem in the way that we get these low promotable tasks assigned, and then take turns. Or another way to do it is to keep track, is just to go into organizations and say, okay, let's look at the things that we all classify as being non-promotable tasks, and let's see who it is who ends up doing it. And certainly the firms that we have been talking to, it looks like the stuff that is lowest rank in terms of promotability is what gets assigned to women predominantly. So just being aware, I think part of the issue is really not that anyone wants to assign the non-promotable task to women. It's that it just ended up that way. And simple.
Well, I'm also wondering because in your study you did mention the fact that I think the groups were given like 2 minutes or something to make a decision, and while everyone would sit there and sort of run out the clock, it seems almost as if men in the group were just not going to volunteer at any point. So should there be a change in the way, you were saying take turns, but is there perhaps maybe a pressure that men feel to not take on these menial tasks because that's, quote, women's work?
Yeah, no, so, I mean, I think the going for a volunteer is not the way to do it, unless you start making it clear that the last volunteer who did this task was female, and now the next person who's going to volunteer will have to be male. So I think this notion, if we know that women are more likely to volunteer in situations like this because they ultimately get to the point where they say, no one else is going to do it, it has to get done, then I'm just going to get it done. If we know that that's a problem that gets women assigned to tasks where their skills are not best demonstrated, then it is in the interest of the firms to make sure that that doesn't continue. And I think that's really, more so than in other cases, this is not, you know, one of the things that is puzzling when you look at the labor market is that Women have made very, very significant advances, both in terms of education and sort of equality more generally in the labor market. The one thing where we are not making headway is in terms of moving up the corporate ladder. We continue to see very, very large differences there. And it's hard to imagine that all these well-educated women who are coming out, that we wouldn't want to make sure that we see what their potential is. And we're not going to see that potential if we give them sort of the non-promotable task where they can't show off their skills. So certainly in the beginning of a young person's life, we should make sure that we allocate these tasks equally across men and women so that we can see what their skills are before they get used to just being, you know, the permanent low client.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. I do want to get in a quick message that we got from a listener on Twitter who said that when they worked for NY Telephone in a mostly male work environment, so I'm going to assume this was a woman, the one thing I was told by other workers was, quote, do not ever volunteer for anything, end quote. I'm Jenna Flanagan, and we've been speaking with Lisa Vesterlund, the Andrew W. Mellon Professor of Economics at the University of Pittsburgh, about her recent article for the Harvard Business Review, Why Women Volunteer for Tasks That Don't Lead to Promotions.